Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Riley Kandel. In today's episode, we spoke with Alex Herrera, MD. In the exclusive interview, Dr. Herrera discussed the March 2026 FDA approval of nivolumab in combination with AVD for the treatment of adult and pediatric patients who are 12 years of age and older with previously untreated stage 3 or 4 classical Hodgkin lymphoma. In addition to discussing the approval and where this regimen fits into day-to-day clinical practice, Herrera also dissected data from the Phase 3 SWOG 1826 study that supported the regulatory decision. With nivolumab and AVD now approved by the FDA for patients with untreated classical Hodgkin lymphoma, how do you see this regimen impacting clinical practice?
The approval of nivolumab AVD for patients with untreated advanced stage Hodgkin lymphoma marks an important advance. For the treatment of these patients, there was a sizable improvement in outcomes over one of our prior standard regimens, brentuximab vedotin AVD. And not only did nivolumab AVD improve outcomes, but also it was better tolerated, and very few patients needed radiation. I think the S1826 study was an important study. We've seen this regimen be adopted, certainly. In the United States, there's increasing use of the regimen. And I think this really allows this regimen to be a new standard for patients with advanced stage Hodgkin lymphoma.
How will this regimen improve patient quality of life? Conversely, are there areas of patient quality of life that could be potentially negatively affected by this regimen?
Right. The S1826 study showed that nivolumab AVD improved the tolerability of frontline treatment. The regimen that it was compared to, rituximab vedotin AVD, was associated with an increase in peripheral neuropathy, an increase in low blood counts, febrile neutropenia, and sepsis. And that necessitated the use of growth factor to boost the white blood cells. Nivolumab AVD doesn't require the use of growth factors. It's optional, and some providers opt to use it. But not having to use a growth factor is a big advantage. Patients are going to have less bone pain and the symptoms associated with having to use growth factor. There's less infections and sepsis. And so I think overall, there's an improvement in the tolerability of treatment and fewer complications associated with treatment. Not having to deal with neuropathy is a big deal. The peripheral neuropathy that we saw with brentuximab combined with AVD really could have lasting effects and the negative impact on quality of life. In fact, in the S1826 study, we formally evaluated patients' quality of life. There's a manuscript in preparation that'll be published soon, but we did observe that patients reported improved quality of life with nivolumab AVD combined with brentuximab vedotin AVD. They noted less neuropathy, in a patient-reported manner, as opposed to kind of physician reporting that we typically do on clinical trials. There was less neuropathy and kind of improved overall quality of life. So I think that's really powerful to have results really kind of from the patient's voice saying this was a kind of a better tolerated regimen. In terms of any potential negative quality of life impacts, nivolumab use does introduce the possibility of immune-related adverse events. And we did observe some on the study. It was a relatively low rate, but important. It's an important side effect that we need to monitor. It may necessitate the use of steroids and can have some lasting effects for patients. Certainly an important thing to continue to monitor with this regimen.
What can you tell us about the significance of the efficacy data for nivolumab AVD?
The efficacy that we observed with nivolumab AVD on the study was pretty dramatic in kind of how it prolonged progression-free survival compared to brentuximab vedotin AVD. The original kind of primary analysis showed even at 1 year of follow-up on average in the study, already patients who had received nivolumab AVD had a significantly improved progression-free survival. Those results were sustained. That improvement was sustained at 2 years with a 2-year progression-free survival of 92% in patients who received nivolumab AVD. And this past year at the ASH annual meeting, we presented 3-year follow-up from the study, demonstrating that the 3-year progression-free survival with nivolumab AVD was 91% compared to 82% with brentuximab vedotin. So it's really a remarkable advance that we're able to induce prolonged and durable remissions in more than 90% of patients with advanced stage Hodgkin lymphoma. These are the highest risk patients. And importantly, when you look at kind of different subgroups of patients who are treated on the trial, we treated adolescents, adults, and older adults. All of those different subgroups of patients benefited from the use of nivolumab. If you looked at patients with stage three or stage four disease, patients with kind of low risk international prognostic scores versus high risk international prognostic scores, kind of however you evaluated the study, whatever subgroups you analyzed, nivolumab ABD was associated with benefit. And so that's pretty powerful. I think it simplifies how we think about treating these patients. In the past, often we would say, well, I might use this or that regimen for a patient with particularly high risk disease. With this regimen, the S1826 study demonstrated that really kind of any patient with stage three or four advanced stage Hodgkin lymphoma appeared to benefit compared to brentuximab vedotin ABD. So I think it's particularly applicable to practice in any setting, both academic and community settings. It's pretty easy, relatively speaking, to use. Patients treated in community centers are being treated by doctors who are familiar with these drugs, right? Nivolumab, pembrolizumab. Immune checkpoint blockade is used for a whole range of cancers. So I think that's an advantage of this regimen.
Are there any key considerations with this combination? How could that past experience help clinicians integrate this combination into clinical practice?
Yeah, I think we've learned a lot over the years about how to treat Hodgkin lymphoma. And, I think one important thing that we've learned with these regimens that where patients are getting treated every 2 weeks, with whether it was with ABVD or brentuximab vedotin ABD, nivolumab ABD. And I think one thing that we see a lot is that now patients with nivolumab ABD, since they're not necessarily getting growth factor, they're going to present with very deep neutropenia. And that is okay. That's not a reason to delay therapy or stop therapy. Patients should continue to receive the treatment in that setting. Again, it's okay to use growth factors, but not required. I think when we think about the particular side effects that of concern with nivolumab ABD in terms of immune-related adverse events, these are toxicities that doctors in the community are pretty comfortable managing. Patients with solid tumors who receive these drugs, may develop inflammation in different parts of the body, pneumonitis, colitis. I think practitioners have experience managing these types of side effects. So I think it's an advantage that the learning curve of using the regimen is not as steep because there's a lot of familiarity with using these drugs and their potential adverse effects. So I think that really speaks to applicability to our practice, certainly in North America.
How do you think the actual impact of this approval affects the treatment paradigm? What types of new treatment decisions are going to be made? Are there any subsets of patients at all that you might be hesitant to give this combination to?
A particular subset of patients where I'm hesitant to use nivolumab ABD is patients who have autoimmune diseases. So, we know from a lot of experience, especially in solid tumors, that patients with autoimmune diseases who receive checkpoint blockade are likely to develop immune-related adverse events. I am loath to challenge those patients with nivolumab ABD. I think in the end of the day, we have very effective treatments for Hodgkin lymphoma short of using nivolumab ABD. That being said, I do see this regimen and the resulting FDA approval after the S1826 leading to a real kind of change in practice in the United States. I think, in fact, I think we've already observed that change when this regimen was included in the NCCN guidelines. But I think it'll be common place to use this regimen for patients with stage three or four Hodgkin lymphoma. It's not the only regimen out there. Brentuximab vedotin ABD remains an option. ABVD even remains an option. The German Hodgkin study group evaluated BRCAD, which integrates brentuximab vedotin into the kind of classical escalated BICOP backbone. And that also is a very effective option. But I think given our practice in North America, we tended to use the ABVD backbone and the kind of its variants. I see the regimen really becoming kind of the most commonly used regimen for patients with stage three or four disease based on, again, the efficacy that we've observed, which was superior to the prior kind of ABVD type regimens and the improved tolerability and patient quality of life that we've observed in the study.
Aside from now and this recent approval, what are the next steps for Hodgkin lymphoma? Are there any other trials that are ongoing that you're looking forward to or anticipating data from?
So one space where we have not really integrated the new drugs, or the novel agents, Pratuxima, Vedotin, and checkpoint blockade, is in early stage Hodgkin lymphoma. And part of that is because the bar is high. Outcomes are already pretty excellent in patients with stage one or two Hodgkin lymphoma. And so there is an ongoing phase three study, again, in the North American cooperative groups led by the Children's Oncology Group, that is incorporating the novel drugs. And right now it's going to enroll about 1700 patients. It's nearly halfway completed in terms of its accrual. But that study, if positive, would pretty substantially reduce the amount of chemotherapy patients receive. They'd be getting only two cycles of chemotherapy with ABVD, followed by moving just potentially to immunotherapy. So, that's a study that we certainly are following and awaiting the data from. There are many ongoing studies incorporating either rituximab, Vedotin, a randomized study like the RADAR study. There are studies in Europe that are looking at incorporating PD-1 blockade into the treatment of early stage disease. So, I think that that's potentially a space where we can make more impact. In terms of kind of the future directions in advanced stage Hodgkin lymphoma, I think we've gotten to a point with the ABVD backbone and the escalated BICOT backbone where integrating the novel agents has led to really superb outcomes, right? We're leading to long-term remission in more than 90% of patients. I think the next questions in advanced stage disease probably have to do with how do we refine therapy, right? Are there groups of patients who have a deep enough response early in therapy that where we could potentially reduce the number of cycles of chemotherapy or individual chemotherapies like doxorubicin, like anthracyclines, for example? Can we potentially de-escalate therapy? Or are there patients in whom we can see that the response is not sufficient early on and we could potentially adapt their therapy? And traditionally we've used PET scans in Hodgkin lymphoma, but I think we have new tools like circulating tumor DNA, for example, where we can use a blood test to microscopic amounts of DNA in the blood that represent residual disease. So I think that's certainly a potential future direction for us using circulating tumor DNA to optimize treatment in advanced stage disease.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thank you again for listening to OncLive On Air.